Morning. So last time we finished up talking about sort of how direct map caches work for reads. So we mentioned that, well, when we read something in from a direct map cache and it's not there, the direct map cache is going to be responsible for getting to the next level to get that value. And also, it's going to bring in the whole block that the value we were retrieving was in and place it in the cache for later. Because we have the assumption that, well, typically we have an access now, it's likely to be used again later, so we want to have it in our cache. We mentioned that, well, it's always a block, and our blocks start where the offset bits are zero, because that's how we organized our cache in memory when we came up with this scheme for doing caching. And we can't make exceptions for that because we don't have the storage to write down that, oh, I don't have the whole block here, I have part of the block. Then we talked a bit about sort of calculating how the addresses are split into tag index offset. And we looked particular at sort of an extension of our direct map cache design where we said, well, sometimes the direct map cache, we have some bad luck that we just have two addresses that happen to have the same index bits that happen to be being accessed at the same time. And this means that we have space in our cache which isn't really being used, but we have one set where there's a bunch of conflicts. We have values that are both in use that want to be in cache because they have good temporal locality. And we can't cache both of them at the same time, so we end up having a lot more misses than we would if we just had some alternative place to put it in that row, that set. And set associative caches give us exactly that. So we say, rather than having one place to push each value, we're going to have E for some number E that we'll choose. And one way of looking at this is that we basically take E direct map caches and put them side by side, and we try to use all of them together. And we can extend this scheme all the way to making it so we have our cache just have one set. In which case, what we'll end up with is, well, we have a cache where we still divide up memory into blocks, but we can just put that block anywhere on the cache, and we figure out which block we actually have by looking at the tag, which is now going to be everything but the offset bits. So that's sort of our extreme case. That's called fully associative. And our other extreme was our direct map caches we started with, and we can choose points in between where the compromise we're getting is that, well, we have to check less places in our cache when we're seeing if we have the value cached than we would for the fully associative case, but we have more flexibility than the direct map case where not infrequently we'll end up with situations where we have some value we really want to cache that we wouldn't be able to just because there's another value we also really want to cache and we can't keep them both. Okay, so questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so we're going to talk about two big issues that we kind of skipped over when we talked about this set associative cache idea. And one of them is replacement policies. So in this example here, we ended up with a case where I had a miss, and we figured out that the miss would go to set 0. And this miss is for address 64. And we want to put it in set 0 along with 65 because that's the block. Block is either 64 and 65. And, well, we have two choices. And we need to choose one of them. So, can someone give me a choice we can make in this case? So, like, what's someone give me a choice we can make and a reason why we might want to make it? So, is there some reason why we would want to choose this place over this place? Or are they both equal? Yeah. So your idea is maybe you want to override 60 and 61 because the other one is accessed more recently. So you're saying, okay, we are assuming locality, and locality would tell us that if I were guessing what access gets written in the row below here, it's probably going to be more likely to be 0 or 1 than 6, 0, or 6, 1 because of how locality works. And that's, I think, indeed, you know, probably the easiest assumption. So there's other choices we could have made, but we'll start with that idea. So that we want to keep the thing where locality tells us, you know, it's the thing that's least likely to be accessed next. So this idea is called least recently used. So here we could implement that policy by looking at the list of accesses. And well, we could make a cache where we store that list of accesses, and then we go through that list of accesses on a miss and figure out what to replace, but that's not going to be very convenient. That seems like it's a lot of work to do in hardware, especially like writing the HTL code to like maintain that list and scan through it. Seems hard. So we're going to want to do some other bookkeeping. And for this two-way cache, to keep track of what's least recently used, well, we just need to keep track of whether the first column, the first way, is least recently used, or the second for each set. So we'll add one extra bit of information for that. So we'll keep track of which block was read least recently. So something which people might miss about this is that this, if we're talking about locality, we want to keep track of which was read least recently, not which was brought into the cache least recently. So in this case, the least recently used way, so this is just this way 0 and way 1, is 1, and that's because we accessed 0 more recently, and when we did that, we updated our least recently used information to say now way 1 is the least recently used one. It does not mean that we brought way 1 into the cache least recently. In fact, we brought it in most recently, because the time we brought way 1, the 6-0 and 6-1 into the cache was here, which was well after when we brought the 0 and 1 in. So least recently used is not the same as least recently brought into the cache. Okay. So I'm showing doing this bookkeeping for two ways. Now, so I'm going to show this for two ways, and two ways is usually what I have in slides because, well, putting more ways in slides is very busy. But if we wanted to extend this to three ways, we can't just track which way is least recently used. Can someone tell me why? And to think of the problem, think of how, if we do multiple replacements, how that's going to work. So what's the problem? So if I have three ways, I can't just track 0, 1, or 2. I need more information. So why do I need more information? Let's draw the scenario. So let's say I have way 0, 1, way 2, and I'm saying I can't just track, you know, that, for example, way 1 is the least recently used of these. So why is that not going to be sufficient? What? Yes? Could there be two least recently used? Like, meaning could there be a tie?
Yeah.
So we're going to assume that we have the accesses in an order. I agree, there might be real caches where that's not the case. We'll assume we have them in an order, or we choose an order. There's a bigger issue. Yeah. Yeah, so the issue is that, okay, now way 1's least recently used, so let's put something into the cache. So I'm going to put something into the cache, I'm going to replace 1. But now I need to update this least recently used information, and I have no idea whether to put 0 or 2 for the next time you want to put something into that set. So what we actually want to track is sort of the order of the ways, not just the least recently used one. So for 2 ways, well, tracking just the least recently used one gives us the whole order, right? Because the other one's the most. But for 3 or more, we actually need the full order. So what we'll end up wanting to track instead is we'll want to have like 1, then 2 is what we'll track. And this means that on that update, we'll instead update it to 2, then 0. Right. But we actually need to track the full order in the general case. So that we have to do this sort of bookkeeping means that in practice, least recently used is used with caches with a small number of ways. But with a large number of ways, it's a little awkward. That you can do this tracking, and in general, you can figure out from a sort of discrete math argument that it requires log base 2 of e factorial bits to do that, if you do it the most efficient possible way, as far as number of bits, to store that ordering. But that's a lot of work to do for like an 8 or even a 4-way cache. So very commonly, what processors will do instead is they'll approximate least recently used. That rather than storing the full order, they'll like store something like, you know, 2 ways which are accessed recently. And, you know, that will be the information we'll store rather than a full ordering with the precise timing. And this actually works very well because the biggest thing about the sort of taking advantage of locality is not that we want to choose the absolute best option as far as what was accessed most recently, but that we want to avoid things that were recently used in preference for things that were not really recently used. There's usually going to be a big separation between the places we want to go, places we don't. And if things are close in when they were used, how recently they were used, they're probably about as good. So in practice, it works pretty well to use an approximation. And also, the sort of locality idea, that's an approximation anyways. Like, we know that sometimes the thing I'm going to access next is not going to be what we're going to predict with locality anyways. So why would I bother going through tons of effort to implement exactly that when it's an approximation anyways, if I could implement some other approximation that's probably going to be almost as close or might just randomly be closer to the real accesses. And good approximations typically use like 1 or 2 bits per way. So an example of sort of what you might try to do with an approximation, you might try to have like a bit for each way indicating has this way been recently used. Right? That would be an idea you might use to build one of these approximations. And then you do, when you're doing a replacement, you choose one of the ones that doesn't have that bit set, if you can. So those are sort of our good replacement policies. And some cache designers have said, well, these replacement policies have kind of a problem in that I have to update that least recently used bit or bits on every access. This doesn't just mean when we have a miss when we're bringing new things into the cache. Unlike what we've seen before, this means I have to update the cache every time it's read from. And that can be inconvenient or inefficient. So some cache designers have said, well, I know the best policies are going to take into account what things were read recently. That's a lot of work. So instead, I'm going to have policies that just don't do that. And the 2 big ones that don't try to take advantage of that are first in, first out. So first in, first out just means we kind of have a queue of the sets, which basically means first we put something in way 0, queue of the ways, I should say. So first we put something in way 0, then way 1, then way 2, then way 3, until we run out of ways, then we go back to way 0. So to implement first in, first out, we just keep a counter for each set saying, where does the next value go next? So first in, first out, you can think of as, you know, it's ordered by least recently replaced is what it is, which is, so it doesn't take into account whether we've read the thing since we put it in the cache or not. And another policy is that you'd say, you know, first in, first out, that requires us to do track extra information for each set. Let's not even do that and use random. Let's just choose a random way. And you might say, gosh, that sounds like it doesn't work very well, but in fact, in practice, it works pretty well. And the intuition for why a random policy might actually work is that, let's say we choose the worst thing to replace. So the worst thing to replace is something that's going to be accessed again soon. So what's going to happen soon is that that thing is going to be brought into the cache, and it's going to replace something else. It might replace the same thing, but it's going to kind of self-correct. Now it's going to be brought into the cache. So doing the random policy actually works pretty well in practice. It's not as good as the other ones, but it works pretty well. So it's not that big a deal. And usually it's actually for pseudo-random. Like, basically, it'll have a random number generator in the cache that they use for all replacements. Questions about these potential replacement policies? Let's do a little exercise. So let's say I have a one set that's a fully associative cache with five ways and 4-byte blocks. And here's our access pattern as far as memory addresses. So first we access address 0, then 1000 in hex, 4, then 1004 in hex, then 0, then 1008 in hex, and so on. So what we'd hope with this pattern is that our accesses to 0 and 4 after these first ones should all be hits, and everything else kind of has to be misses because we only access each block once for the other blocks. So my question is, with different replacement policies, what sort of, you know, hit rate do we expect? How well are they going to do at keeping the things we access frequently in their cache? And I'd say for random, I'm looking for a crude approximation. Let's not do the full probability class exercise. Which actually computing sort of the expected value would be. So who would like some more time? Okay, so let's start with LRU. Who can tell me, what do you think happens for LRU? It's least recently used. No volunteers. So let's, I have a slide for this. We have one set, so we're just listing the entire contents of the cache here. And to implement the least recently used policy, we have to track the order in which blocks are used. So initially we access 0, we're going to bring in the block containing that, which is 0 through 3, inclusive. Then we access 1,000, and now 0 is the least recently used. We access 4, that brings in 4 through 7, now 0 is still the least recently used. We access 1,004, and now 0 is still the least recently used. Then we access 0, and even though it's a hit, we have to update our cache information to say, that means that it's first. So we had a miss, and then we had a hit. And then we access 1,008, which we've never accessed before, so that's going to be a miss. V-axis 4, and that's going to be a hit, and it's also going to reorder the list of what was least recently used. And after we have warm-up, so after we start this process, after we first access 0 and 4, all the accesses to 0 and 4 will be hits, because we'll have accessed them recently enough that they'll always stay close enough to the top of that list. They'll never drift off the end of the list, which is how things get replaced. So for example, here, when I access 100C, I have to bring that in, and to do that, I'm discarding 1000 through 1003, because it's the least recently used thing. Sort of made it to the end of our list. But 0 and 4 never will do that, because we keep putting them to the front as most recently used. So after we access them the first time to bring them into the cache, they'll always be hits. Some questions how I came up with that? Sir, yes. So the dash 3 means that this is this cache block here. This is the cache block with memory at address 0, memory at address 1, memory at address 2, and memory at address 3. And similarly, this 1000 through 1003 is memory at address 1000, 1001, and so on. Is that?
Okay, so you're saying that since we have 0 and 4 routines, we hit them every time and we're accessed.
So the question is, I'm saying that the access is to 0 and 4 here, we hit them every time? Yes. So if we look at what the cache was before the access, they were in the cache. So each of these rows is showing the state of our cache after the access to the thing on the left side. Does that clarify things? Other questions about my under-explained diagram? So I just simulate what happened in the cache, and I'm writing down the state of the cache after each access. And our cache has one set, so I'm just writing down the contents of that single row. And in the order that our least recently used information would occur. Other questions, comments, points of confusion? So we asked about LRU. We also asked about FIFO, first in, first out. So for first in, first out, I can do the same kind of tracking, except rather than having most recently used to least recently used, I have sort of most recently inserted to least recently inserted into the cache, or replaced. So I track the same kind of information, and I just do this sort of mechanical process where I say, okay, if we need to bring in something new into the cache, it goes into the last inside of this. In practice, probably what will happen is that we'll like go to way 0, 1, 2, 3, and we'll track which is the last way. But here I'm just showing it in order because that's a lot clearer than writing down the way 0, way 1, 2, and then saying way 1 is last. But that's how the cache is going to track it, because moving things around in the cache is not very easy. And I can just sort of mechanically see that, so I have my initial accesses that are misses to 0 and 4, and then I have a hit, but 0 is still, after the hit, the last thing that was put in, the first in, because, well, we accessed it first, and that's when it was put in the cache. We have another, and we have a hit to 4 after, in our second access. But 4 is the third thing that was put into the cache, and it still is. And eventually, we need to put something into the cache, and we're out of room. And what happens here? Well, on this access to 1000C, we need to bring in this block, and it's going to replace the first in thing, 0 through 3. Even though we accessed it recently, because in first in, first out, we aren't tracking actual accesses, we're tracking when things were brought into the cache. And so that means that the next access to 0 is a miss because of that. And if we sort of go through this pattern, we end up seeing sort of after our warm-up that 2/3 of the accesses to 0 and 4 are hits in sort of a repeating pattern, just because it takes 5 accesses to other things for them to drift off the end of the cache. And of course, the access to everything else are always misses because we only access them once. So like, we probably really shouldn't put them in the cache, but the way our cache works, it doesn't have that option. So questions, how to figure this out? So another way of thinking about this sort of 2/3 hit rate is that we access, you know, when we access 5 other things, like, we lose a value. That's sort of where that comes from. But sort of simulating it is sort of how we get a definitive exact answer. So how about the case of random? Can someone give me an idea of, like, what should I be thinking about for how a random replacement policy would perform? So I would say the question I want to ask is, let's look at this access here. I want to know, assuming the cache was full, what are the chances that one of the accesses in between here would have replaced it? So I have 3 accesses. Though when the cache gets warmed up, usually the access to 4 should be a hit, so it shouldn't replace anything. So I would say, sort of my rough approximation would be, usually 2 new values in cache, which I'll represent with a dollar sign, between each access to 0 or 4. And sometimes 3 new values, because sometimes 4 will be put into the cache for the first time, or put into the cache again after being evicted, but usually 2. So if it's 2, then each of these 2 new values, so each time, each new value has a 1 in 5 chance of replacing, you know, of replacing 0x0, if that's in the cache. And therefore, the chance that it won't be replaced sort of is 1 minus 4/5, so approximate, because I'm not taking into account where we have another replacement for 4, chance of it not being replaced. Being replaced. So this is something like a 64% hit rate if you do that math. And it's going to be a bit lower because we haven't dealt with what if accessing 4 also replaces 0, which could happen too. So this gives me a sort of less than 64% hit rate for 0-4. Again, after warm up, after we've accessed them the first time. Yes. So the chance of it being replaced is, four-fifths times four-fifths is the chance that both times we don't replace it. So four-fifths chance we don't replace it the first time there's a replacement, times four-fifths the chance that it doesn't happen the second time, too. Just what? Four-fifths times four-fifths is the you are correct that four-fifths times four-fifths is the chance of not being replaced. I was computing the chance of being replaced, but that's not what we wanted. But four-fifths times four-fifths, I believe, is 64%. So we have this sort of probability reasoning. We're basically saying, what's the chance of it happening? And I'm probably not going to ask for precise numbers on random replacement policy because this isn't a probability class. And in practice, people would simulate it. They wouldn't do the probability calculation. They'd like write a program to simulate it, I say, and run it enough times to get good statistics. Okay, so questions about sort of this look at replacement policies? Okay, and we can see that for, not surprisingly, for this access pattern which has locality for the 0 and 4, that the better our replacement policy is about taking into account locality ideas, the idea of looking at how recently things were used in some way, the better it does. Questions on this exercise? Okay, so that's about replacement policies. Now, there's one issue we haven't dealt with, which is write. So we've only talked about reading things into our cache, but of course our programs need to write things to memory. And we need to talk about how that works with caches. And there are two big policy decisions we have to make when designing a cache, which are going to have sort of effects on how complicated our cache is and what our performance is like. So one is, what do we do when we're writing to a value that's in our cache? What do we do with that value exactly? So one thing we're always going to do is we're always going to update the cache value. That if you write to address ABCD, you expect that value to be what you read out. So if it's in the cache, we better update the cache. But a question is, when do we update the next level? So one option is we can update the next level right away. So the advantage of this is that we don't have to update the next level later. The disadvantage is that this means that every write requires us to go to the slower memory. And that might sound like it kind of defeats the point of caches. It's not really so bad in practice. And the main reason why is that it turns out we can do this write kind of asynchronously, that we can do it in the background so we don't need to wait for it to finish. But it is slow, because that our main memory is gonna, or our next level of cache is gonna be slower. It's not gonna be able to do as many writes as we would be able to do if we didn't have to go through it. So the other option is that we can not do that write. And this first option is called write through. We go to the next level. The other option is called write back. So it's called write back. We're not gonna do the write, but we have to remember that value we changed, because eventually we want to make sure that memory gets updated. In particular, you know, we don't have to do anything right now, because if the processor asks for the value, we'll just give it back to them. So as far as the processor is concerned, yes, we updated ABCD. The problem is we might need to get rid of that value from the cache. So for example, let's say we read an address which happens to map to the same set, and we decide with our replacement policy that ABCD is the thing that should be replaced. In that case, if we want to remember that we wrote 10 to ABCD, we better send it to the next level because there's no other place that's going to be remembered. So this is why this is called write back. So we'll write the value back, but later. And to do this, we're going to track this extra piece of information for each cache block about whether it's what we'll call dirty. So a dirty cache block is one that needs to be written back to the next level to clean it up. We have some unfinished work that we need to do. And we'll track that information because we don't want to have to write everything to memory, because a lot of values are just random or would already have been updated in memory. So we're going to track which blocks have changed, so we only write those back, so not every read involves doing a write if we have to replace something. So we'll do that write, and also, of course, because the processor asked to read this conflicting value, we'll read in the new value too. So our read became a delayed write plus the actual read as a result of having this policy that we try to not to do writes until we need to. Okay, so questions about write through versus write back? So if we have a cache with a write-back policy, we're going to have an extra bit for every cache block saying, is this value dirty? Is it a value that hasn't been sent to the next level yet? Questions? So this was all in the case where we were writing to a value that should be in our cache. So a second question comes up is whether when we write to a value that's not cached, whether it should go in our cache. And locality would say yes, because I'm likely to access it again soon. And it seems like, well, why would this be a problem? We just put that value in our cache, and that's kind of free, right? And well, no, it isn't. And the problem is that usually when we're writing a value to the cache, we're not writing a full cache block. So usually the processor, would ask to write only part of a cache block. So in this example, we have 2-byte cache blocks, but the processor might ask to write 1 byte, right? In which case, if the processor asks to write, memory at 6.6, we can put the new value for memory at 6.6 in here, but we also need to fetch the value for the rest of the block. So it turns out that because our cache blocks are usually much larger than the size the processor deals with in a load or store instruction, like a move, it's going to be the case that if we actually store things that the processor writes directly in the cache, we're going to have to do a lot of extra reading. And probably this is good because maybe we'll access those extra things we read, but it's a cost. So there's a second decision about whether we allocate cache blocks and write. So there's two different designs we could have. So one is called write allocate. So this says if the processor writes to part of a cache block and we don't have that in our cache, we're going to put it in our cache, even though that means we're going to have to read the rest of the cache block, because we can only store the whole thing. So you write 4 bytes, and the cache blocks are 64 bytes, we're going to read 60 bytes to fill in the rest of the cache block. So that's write allocate. An alternate policy called write no allocate is we'll say, gosh, reading in those 60 bytes, that sounds like a lot of work. I'm just going to send this write of 4 bytes to the next level and not cache it yet. Maybe you'll read those 60 part of those bytes later, in which case then I will bring in the full 64 bytes back into my cache. But for now, I'm just going to send the write to the next level. And sort of what choice you want to make is probably the main factor is how much you think locality applies to writes. So if you think the values we're writing we're never going to read again, it kind of makes sense not to cache them. Because, you know, you won't get much benefit out of caching them. Or you're never going to write the same address again, kind of makes sense. If you think I could take advantage of writing them, then maybe it doesn't. And so we have this write allocate versus write no allocate. Now, write allocate versus write no allocate and write through versus write back, they're separate decisions. So I can separately decide whether I put values in cache that I don't have already on a write, that's write allocate, from whether, you know, if I have a value in my cache and write to it, whether I update the next level right away or I delay it. That's write through versus write back. But probably write back works better with write allocate, because if we're trying to avoid sending writes to the next level, probably we want to do that even on cases where we're writing things that aren't cached yet. And write no allocate works better with write through, because probably if we're going to send all the writes to the next level anyways, it doesn't make sense to cache it proactively on just a write. You can wait for a read to do that. But they are independent decisions, so you could combine them in any way. So let's sort of go through what happens here. So let's say we have here a write allocate, write back cache. So this is write allocate, write back cache. And we write the value FF into address 04. So what we're going to see, okay, 04, it's index 0 tag 1 in this cache. So I look index 0. Okay, does this match tag 1? Nope. Does this match tag 1? Nope. So I'm going to have to choose what to replace. And in this case, I have a least recently used replacement policy. And the least recently used way is way 1. So way 0, way 1. So I'm going to find my least recently used block. It's that one. And I've chosen to replace that. And bad luck, the thing I've chosen to replace is dirty. So before I bring it in, I'm going to have to write it back in this case. Then I'm going to have to read in from memory address 5, because we only wrote to address 4, but what I have to store in the cache is the whole block, and that's address 4 and 5 in this case. So I read in address 5, and I also update the LRU information. So this write involved another write of something else, a read, and also updating metadata about when things were used. And that's sort of the normal operation of this cache with these write policies and this replacement policy. Okay, so questions? Sort of this example of what happens with write allocate and write back. If we had a write no allocate policy in this case, well, what we would say is it cached? Is address 4 cached? Nope, we're done. We just send it to the next level. We're done. We wait until it's read to do anything about it. And so I show the example of, so we talked about write allocate back. So let's go through other examples with this write allocate, write back policy. So we're doing write allocate, which means that on a write, we want to put it in the cache. And we're going to have write back, which is we're tracking whether things are dirty or not. And if we start with the caches above, these aren't cumulative. I'm asking which of these involve reading a value from memory or the next level, and writing, which involve writing a value. Would like some more time? Anyway, okay, so let's start with our first one, writing one byte to address 33. So who thinks this would involve reading from the next level? Thinks this would involve writing to the next level? Okay, a few people. So the answer I would get is neither, which I think, not sure whether that was the majority answer. So we have a value for this address here already. So what we're going to do is we're going to update that value. And because we're just updating that value, we don't need to bring anything into the cache, so we don't need to read anything. We also don't need to evict anything, we don't need to write anything back out. It happens that this value is already marked dirty, which means that probably either 3.2 or 3.3 has been updated in the past. So we're not even going to update that. It's still dirty. It's still not the same as what's in the next level, and that's fine. We're not going to actually send that value to memory until some later access causes us to evict this block, which I think is the main point of confusion. Yes, we're going to write it eventually, but not yet. So questions? I figured that out. And so by require, I mean for this particular access. So I understand, yes, eventually we'll need to write it to memory. But that's, you know, we need some future access to require to make us to actually do that. That evicts that value. Questions? Okay, so let's do second part. Reading one byte from address 5.2. So who thinks this will require reading from the next level? Thinks it doesn't require reading from the next level? Okay. Thinks this will require writing to the next level? Thinks that won't require writing to the next level? Okay. And no clue. Okay, a few for no clue. Okay, so let's think about address 5.2. So this in hexadecimal is 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 5, 0, 0, 1, 0. We have our offset bits and our index bit and then our tag. So we're in index 1, none of the tags match, so we have to bring in this block. And to bring in this block into index 1, we look at least recently used, and we find out the thing that we need to replace is way 1, is this. So the first step is going to be to get that block out of this cache. And because it's marked as dirty, that's not free. We have some values which have been updated that we haven't told the next level about yet. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to write 3.2 and 3.3 back to memory. And then we're going to read in 5.2 and 5.3 to fill in the block. And we're also going to update the LRU information. Questions? How I figured that out? So first I figured out what set it was. Then I asked, is it in the set? Nope. Said, what are we replacing? Found out we were replacing something that was marked as dirty. And therefore, I had to write that out first, and then I could read in the thing we wanted to read from the next level. Okay, so how about reading from address 5.0? So let's say, who thinks this will require reading a value from the next level? Thinks it won't require any reading a value from the next level? Okay. Thinks it will require writing a value to the next level? Thinks it won't require writing a value to the next level? No clue. Okay, so let's look at this address here. We have pretty good consensus it requires reading a value from the next level. And we can infer that because, well, it's not in the cache. So we have to bring it in. We're going to have to get that from the next level. We can't get the value any other way. So the address here, if we write it in binary, it has an offset bit of 0 and the index bit is 0. So it goes to our first row. And we want to bring it into the first row. It's not there already. And to figure out where you bring it in, we use our replacement policy. Our replacement policy because we put it in the least recently used way. The least recently used way is way 0, because that's what the LRU, least recently used information, says. And so what we'll be replacing is 3.0 and 3.1. To replace that, we look at that and it's not marked as dirty. So it hasn't been written to, so we don't need to tell the next level about it, because it's the same value we got from the next level. Don't need to update it. So we don't need to write back, so we have no write back, but we do need to read the block to get the value because it's not in our cache. And we're going to put it in this first part here. So this is going to be place that and change the tag and change the LRU to 1. Yes? How did I decide which way to you? Because we have a least recently used replacement policy, I need to use information about which side was least recently used, and that's this bit labeled LRU for least recently used. Does that answer your question? Yeah, okay. Other questions? question, do I need to change the dirty bit to 1? No. So the dirty bit changes to 1 when we write something. What the dirty bit indicates is that our value is different than what's in the next level. So if we know the value is still the same, we just keep it set at 0. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay, and I have this worked out. Worked out. Okay, so let's do same exercise, but this is cache now is write, no allocate, write through. So we have the other possible choices, the sort of opposite end of the choices for our write policy. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, let's start with our first one. Who thinks that that involves reading a value from memory? Writing 2, 3, 3. Who thinks it involves writing a value to memory? Okay, no clue. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus. This involves writing a value to memory, and yes. And this is exactly what write through does, is that says, doesn't matter what's in the cache right now, we're writing it to the next level. And since it's write, no allocate, we would update the cache if the value was stored there. It happens not to be, so we don't even update the cache. How about reading a byte from address 5.2? Who thinks this involves reading a value from memory? Thinks this involves writing a value to memory? Thinks this does not involve writing a value to memory? Okay, and no clue. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus. We have to read something. We don't have the value in our cache. So what we're going to do is we're going to replace this. Now here, I don't have a dirty bit anymore. You might say, why don't you have a dirty bit? Don't we need to track whether the values are different than memory? Well, no, we don't, because we have a write-through policy that they're never different than the next level because we always write to the next level. And that means we never have to update the next level when we're replacing values because we did it earlier. We already updated it, so we just have to read only. We don't have to write because the writes, if we needed to do any write, did any writes to that value, we did them earlier. So how about our reading from address 5.0? Who thinks this involved reading a value from memory? Did not involve reading a value from memory? Okay. Who thinks this involved writing a value to memory? Did not involve writing a value to memory? Still don't have as much consensus. So this is the same situation. This is read only. So we're going to replace something, but we know the thing we're replacing, you know, is the same as what's already in memory. We don't need to update memory. Some questions? I figured out what happened here. So in this case, when we do the replacements, memory's up to date, we don't need to do anything special. Okay, so something impression you might get, oh, we're doing all these writes to the next level, doesn't that make things slow? Like, in the case of these writing on reading, doesn't that make our read slow? And in practice, not as much as you might think. And there's a thing that caches do to speed up writes, and which makes them faster in practice, and the big idea is something called a write buffer. So rather than doing the writes and waiting for the write to finish before we move on, the cache will kind of do the writes in the background. So they'll start the write and they'll have a buffer of pending writes. And they'll just let the writes complete while we're doing other work. If the buffer gets full, then we'll have to wait. But if we make this buffer big enough and we aren't writing too much, that's not a problem. And we can deal with reading from values that are being written by checking the buffer like we would as a second cache to check. So we'll check the buffer before we say, oh, I can't read that value. Before reading a value from the memory, just to make sure, if we read a value that was recently written, that we still have it, even if it hasn't made it to the memory yet. So we can make the write appear to complete right away because it's in the buffer, even though in practice is actually happening kind of in the background while the program's doing other things. Okay, so we've talked a bunch about sort of cache policy decisions and sort of cache designs with how many sets we have. And we're going to talk about sort of making decisions about performance. And to talk about performance, we want to talk about sort of what the speed the cache presents to the program is. And there's one big metric we're going to talk about for that, which is going to be average memory access time, which we'll define as the hit time of a cache, so how long it takes when we have a cache hit, when the value is in the cache, plus the miss penalty, so the extra time the cache takes if we don't have a hit, like the extra time to retrieve the value from the next level, for example, times the miss rate. And we call this average memory access time because what we're trying to compute is if I have a random access to the cache, how long does that take? And this is the sort of statistics we're going to want to look at to say, is one cache design better than another? And we have these different variables because if we're thinking about changing part of the cache, that's going to affect multiple of these variables. So for example, if we make the cache bigger, that's going to decrease our miss rate. We're going to have more accesses that are hits. But it's also going to increase our hit time. So to figure out whether that's worthwhile, we want to estimate what the difference will be in this average memory access time formula. So let's do a little exercise. So let's say we have a 90% hit rate. Our hit time is 2 cycles, so we have a cache which takes 2 cycles to do an access, and a 30-cycle miss penalty. So that means that when we have a miss, we need an additional 30 cycles to get the value from the next level. But we take 2 cycles to figure out whether it's a hit or a miss, and if it's a hit, to get the value. So what's our average memory access time? So the formula was hit time plus miss rate times miss penalty, which also could be written hit time times hit rate plus miss time times miss rate, where miss time includes the hit time and the miss penalty. Miss penalty is extra time on the miss. So what should our calculation be for the average memory access time? Yes. 4.8, how did you get that?
2 cycles times
So you have to do hit time times hit rate. okay, times 90% hit rate, okay. Okay, so if we're doing miss time times miss rate, the miss time is the miss penalty is the additional time in addition to the hit time. So if we're doing the times our 10% miss rate, we have 2 plus 30, because this is a penalty. That's an important thing to point out. So when we type miss penalty, that's not the miss time, that's the additional time for a miss. So miss time, and you'll see both values quoted sometimes, depending on like which is easier to compute. So if we want the miss penalty, that would be 2 plus 30 times 10. And this will give us 5. If you don't have the 2 plus, you get your 4 points. Okay. So questions on how that's computed? And I also could have computed this as my hit time plus my miss rate of 10%. My miss rate's 10% because everything that's not a hit is a miss. Times 30, which would also give me this. Questions? So how about our second part here? So let's say I could increase the cache size, but it increases the hit time to 3 cycles. How much higher does the miss rate, does the hit rate have to be for that to be worthwhile? And I guess I'm almost out of time, so I'll do out my logic. So I'm going to use this second version of the formula here. So I want 3 plus question mark percent times 30 equals 5. That will give me the crossover point, right? That will give me the point where I have the same average memory access time as before. I'll put X percent. And I'll use a dot for the time so we don't get confused. And I just need to solve that for X. So I'm just going to do some algebra and have that 2 divided by 30 equals 2 divided by 3 minus 5 minus 3. 2 divided by 30 is X percent. That's going to be, sorry, this X is our miss, this is X is the miss rate. So that's our miss rate. Miss rate, or 1 minus x hit rate. So my hit rate needs to be 28 over 30 hit rate, which is like 96-ish percent. Do I have that? Oh, I do have that worked out. 93-ish percent. So I have that worked. 2 over 30 miss rate. Okay. So questions on how I figured that out? Okay. So next time we'll talk a bit about sort of looking at this formula and our cache design options, and then talk about evaluating, how our caches behave with programs we might write, rather than sort of very artificial access maps.